Up first in hour two this afternoon, though, we get on board the telephone line and welcome in from WBZ in Boston, our friend Michael Hurley. Michael, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. If I listened correctly there, it sounds like right out of golf season, straight into ski season. So who has it better than us?
Right. Welcome to New England, where we have four seasons just often at the same time within a matter of days.
Yeah, you just got to, you know, you got to wear layers, as they say.
So when we first connected there, someone else wanted to join the broadcast today.
That's right. My baby daughter, but she has been forcefully removed from the room because, you know, these interviews cannot be disrupted by incessant. I'm the only one allowed to cry when we talk about Boston sports.
How is she doing in terms of a sleep and adjustment and that sort of thing?
Very good at many things. Sleep, not one of them. But, you know, we'll get there eventually. This is, you know, this is our third time through, so you don't worry about such things. You know that eventually you get out of the tunnel. You just don't know when.
Well, I would think a good opportunity for a nap would come around 9:30 Eastern time Sunday morning.
Yeah, that would be an ideal time to maybe sleep in. Unfortunately, I think I will be up early for that one. But, you know, I think at least, you know, you don't know what's going in. Going into a Patriots game, you don't know how it's going to affect your day. But at least in this one, you know, by 12:30, 1 o'clock, your day is free. You know, you could sit there and watch football all day if you want, or you could go enjoy life, which is something you haven't had the freedom to do for most Sundays this year as a Patriots fan. So I think it's a blessing that they play at 9. I think they should play the rest of their games at 9:30 and just get them out of the way for the rest of the year. But at least we get this.
Well, yeah, especially after the time change where it's dark, at least up here, at about 4:30 in the afternoon. So, you know, if it's a 1 o'clock game, well, that's it. You're not seeing the light of day again.
Yeah, I would even maybe throw in, remember during the COVID year with the rescheduling of games, they'd play on like Tuesday at 5, Wednesday at 6. The Patriots should just, you know, squeeze in as many games as they can in a short window, and then you get a longer off season. But yeah, it's certainly a bit gloomy. Outside of the records, I feel like what's going on with J.C. Jackson, it's just a dysfunctional picture. And this was always, you know, we'd always sit up on our perch in New England and laugh at all the teams going through these struggles. And now the Patriots are just as bad as any of them ever were. And it happened fast, but it's unpleasant, I would say.
Well, I guess that's the most surprising thing, is that this seems to be a team without any direction.
Right, and I'd argue, you know, it's been building there with, you know, just the complete devaluation of offensive positions and prime offensive positions, like, I don't know, quarterback, like wide receiver, like tight end. They've just really de-emphasized it, and year after year their offense has gotten worse, going back to, you know, 2017, and Brady covered for some things, but look at the offense he played with in his last year. You know, after Gronkowski retired, you take Ben Watson out of retirement and throw Matt Lacoste in there. You try to get Sanu and Antonio Brown because you didn't build the receiving core. And really, it's just gotten worse since then. And this is the result. It's an offense-driven league, and they have not valued it. So, you know, they scrapped by 7 wins, 8 wins, 9 wins. And you looked at this year, and best-case scenario was a 9-10 win season. And I think that's indicative of just a philosophy that doesn't work anymore.
Well, when you look at the offense last week against the Commanders, one of the guys who was playing pretty well, Ramondre Stevenson, ended up with, what, 9 touches on the day?
Yeah, 9 carries, which when, you know, you break off a 64-yard run with ease, you'd think you'd go back to it a little bit more, especially it's not like the passing game was really working all that well. And I think that was, you know, there was multiple factors in there. You look at some plays, there was one play, it was a pass to Ramondre Stevenson on that wheel route up the right sideline. There were so many things wrong with that play. From one, you know, David Andrews is blocking a tackle who goes across his face, and the right tackle, City So, is just looking in the other direction, and the pass rusher gets into the backfield. Mac Jones not stepping into his throw and just throwing off the back foot and flipping it in. Like, there's so many layers to their offensive ineptitude. You look at every play and say, you know, Mac should have done this, or the lineman should have done this, or the receiver should have done this. And last week, I think we saw in multiple plays where multiple things you could pinpoint and say they aren't there. So it is just, it seems beyond, you know, fix this and that and then you're good. It seems like they're beyond that.
And when that ball went through the hands of Juju Smith-Schuster, I thought, well, that's the perfect encapsulation of the last 5+ years of Bill Belichick, general manager.
Yep, you know, yeah. Going back to like prioritizing Nelson Agholor, which was an odd choice. But I wouldn't let the coaching off the hook either, because Jonnu Smith was obviously a failure of a signing, and we see that he still has plenty of NFL talent. They just didn't know how to utilize it. So again, it's similar to the on-field product. I think there's multiple layers to the issues, and it goes back not just this year. You know, obviously, I don't know if you know this, Matt Patricia in the offense last year wasn't very good at it. And I think there's a ripple effect. I look at Tyquan Thornton. I don't know that he was going to have an NFL career, a very good one. But I know that entering the year with that coaching staff was bad for him. And maybe his struggles this year are related to never getting proper an NFL introduction. And I just think there's so many issues like that this is what you end up getting. But I will say, for all the doom and gloom, I think it's better to be 2-7 than 4-5. I just think they were kind of content. You know, ownership was content at just meandering through the world at 500 or thereabouts and maybe getting into the playoffs. But I think this at least lays it all bare and forces change, because there's no reason to go through through life mediocre. You might as well suck all the way and hit a hard reset. That's my philosophy.
So have they broken Matt Jones, or is it just that he's a guy who needs, I don't know, the same level of guys around him that he had at Alabama?
You know, I try to be fair with him because there's no doubt he's been put in an awful situation for the past year, both in terms of talent around him, coaching last year, et cetera, et cetera. But he doesn't help himself. And there's plays that he makes individually where, you know, there is blocking, where guys might be open, and he messes it up. So it's one of those things where if you're looking at it, you know, getting the full picture of it, I don't know, you'd have to do a blame pie. He has some blame in it in not taking certain steps, but you look at the bigger picture and say, is it really his fault? So it's a fair question, did they ruin him? But I don't know. I think it's been kind of used as a knock against him when people are like, oh, everything has to be perfect around him and he needs X, Y, and Z. I don't think that's rare for the quarterback position. I know there are guys that can overcome bad situations, but I say look at a guy like Matt Ryan. He had an MVP season. He looked great at times, and he looked awful at times. And, you know, if he didn't have an offensive line and star receivers, he wasn't very good. When he did have, you know, Julio Jones at full strength in an offense that suited him with Kyle Shanahan, he looks great. So I don't think it's exclusive to Mac that you can say, well, he needs X, Y, and Z to do well. I think that's kind of the sport, outside of maybe a few exceptions. And even then, it's limited returns from those guys that can overcome it. So that's a long answer, but it's been hard to properly and fully judge everything about Mac Jones, even though, you know, he hasn't done much to impress on his own.
We're talking with Michael Hurley here on Dante. What do you expect we'll see against the Colts Sunday?
I'm interested in watching the Patriots secondary against Gardner Minshew, who is at least, you know, he's more experienced and confident than Sam Howell, and we saw what Sam Howell did against them. So, especially with the state of the secondary being what it is, where you've got guys getting suspended for the first quarter or first couple series, J.C. Jackson not being allowed to practice or get on the plane, guys like Sean Wade being forced into more action, it's not good. So it's the same story I thought last week. If the Colts can score 24 points, the Patriots won't win. So it's going to be up to the defense, and now they could confuse Gardner Minshew, they could force a couple turnovers, score on defense, win 20-12, and get out of Germany with a win. But I don't like their chances. I didn't like their chances last week, and I still don't like them this week, just because they don't do anything well consistently for me to sit here and say, oh yeah, they got this one. That's shocking. They should be able to beat these lower NFL teams like the Commanders and Colts, but here we are, and they're worse than, I think, both of them.
Well, 4-13 would certainly be ugly, something along those lines, but is there a quick fix out there in the draft?
I don't know. I'm not the draft expert. I know everyone likes the quarterback, but, you know, I look at it and see the Patriots landing something like the 6th pick and taking a guard out of, you know, Iowa and making everyone crazy. So I think maybe different decision-making needs to go into that process. Quick fixes, I mean, they're going to have a lot of, I think free agency is an avenue, but we've seen how many times the teams that go out and spend like crazy in free agency, they get a little pop, they win 3 more games the next year, but none of those deals end up working out in the long term. So they do have to fix it through the draft. I just don't think it'll be quick.
All right, let's talk about a team that's functioning at a significantly higher level. How about this great start for the Bruins?
Yeah, and it's funny. I wrote today about the goalie situation because last year you had Ullmark as that sort of playing out of his mind, ridiculous, wire-to-wire, Vezina favorite, and Swayman has a very good starter behind him. Now they've switched roles sort of seamlessly. I think Swayman is the guy playing out of his mind, which is, I think, more exciting for the franchise because he's 24, he's homegrown, and he's really come up through the system the way that you'd want your starting goalie to. So I think that's been a huge thing. They lead the league in goals against, which is why they're the only team allowing fewer than two goals. So that is going to be their recipe to win. A thing that you certainly know, Bergeron's gone, Krejci's gone. I expected the offense to dip some, and it has. But as long as the defense plays like it has, especially, you know, winning 2 or 3 without McAvoy so far, they're going to win games, not 66 games or whatever, and set records, but they'll still make the playoffs with that defense and goaltending. So I think that's what's driving them, and it's been pretty impressive that, you know, your Vezina candidate falls back to earth, and then his backup comes just right away, takes the place of it.
And this trend that started last year for Jim Montgomery, that this is a team that just hates, well, other than that playoff series, losing more than one game in a row.
It's really bizarre. It really is. And he's, you know, I think he might have talked about their lack of adversity last year, but I'd argue winning all those games in a row, you know, fends off adversity just as well as, I don't think you gain anything from losing 4 in a row if you can just win 12 in a row. So I don't know. It's been fascinating. Even the game they lost in Detroit, you know, between the penalty calls and it kind of got away from them, but it's not as if they went in and got outplayed wire to wire. They maybe had slip up in the third, a referee-aided one, I would say. But yeah, it's been impressive to watch, and I'm not going to act like I'm not surprised that they're 10-1-1. They were a team I thought would be more like most teams as opposed to last year, but here they are.
We'll take it. Absolutely. The way Red Sox season went and Patriots season is going, and we'll embrace the success of the Bruins and the Celtics because, again, it's dark at 4:30. We need light wherever we can get it.
Absolutely. And if I could, I'd like to turn this into a PSA for a brief moment. As I am doing this call injured, I broke some glass in the kitchen yesterday. It fell right in my foot. And it sliced the tendon, and I need surgery. So the PSA is, do not cook dinner under any circumstances. It's too dangerous out there. Just order out. That's my solution.
Well, I think that's great advice. If only someone had given that to you sooner.
Yeah, I shouldn't be cooking, and I never will again. And it's just how life has to be.
We appreciate you playing hurt. That's the kind of competitor you are, Michael.
Absolutely, and I'm not on any pain medication. That's why I was able to be so cogent and wise on the phone.
All right, well, now that you're done, do what you need to do to take care of things. Thank you, Michael. Hope you heal quickly, and we'll talk with you again soon.
Thank you. I'll talk to you later.
Michael Hurley, WBZ Boston, with us here on Downtown.